Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
You worked all week.
Work.
You didn't have time to look at your fantasy lineups.
Son of a b-.
But don't be afraid.
That's why we give you Weekend Fantasy Update.
Woohoo! Working on.
Welcome to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Happy Saturday to you all. Thanks for joining us on your weekend on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network on TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and everywhere else that you can listen to us. So I'm joined this morning by my co-host, Joe Galina. Joe, how are you?
Doing great. Glad to be with you on this Saturday. Missing our buddy George Kurtz. I don't know if you saw it. Did you see that huge blow-up slide he had in his backyard? He's having a big party for his kids. Oh, yeah,
yeah.
He posted it on social media. I mean, I'd like to take a slide down that blow-up slide that he set up for his kids.
Situation going on?
Exactly. I want to see videos of George bouncing on it.
Yeah. George can sometimes seem really grumpy, but yet he does nice things like this. And I think he's a magnanimous guy at heart. He's just a little, you know. He's got like a grumpy persona, and I think he's a little bit miscast in that way. But nonetheless, we wish his daughter a happy birthday. I'm down in Dallas, Texas, doing the show remotely. We are dealing with a technical issue, which hopefully none of the audience members can hear, but or the listeners can hear. But we're sucking it up. We're playing with a little bit of a limp, playing hurt, but we're not injured, is what I would say.
Absolutely, and this is what makes you a great broadcaster. Just rolling with the punches, baby. Rolling with the punches.
I guess so. So, all right, let's just get right into it. It's going to be almost all NFL today. Obviously, we're in the throes of draft season, Joe. I know you texted me something about an ongoing draft. Are you in the middle of that? The DWG5 draft. Are you in the middle of that?
Yes, I am. It's the draft. With Giants 5, and Andy Singleton at People's Pens put this together. I was lucky enough to be involved last year. He invited me back this year. It's a best ball draft, a mixture of people in the fantasy industry and fans alike. And, I'm going to be making my fourth
pick. How
many teams? 15 teams per division. And I think there's about 140 participants in totals, something around there. But I've got our old friend Nando is in my division, and Justin Mason, who created the TGFBI, the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational League. So it's a mixture, like I said, of fantasy guys and gals, and also fans. So it's a lot of fun.
I should have gotten involved in it. It's a slow draft, obviously. I should have gotten involved, but I knew I was going to be traveling this weekend, so I just. I thought it was going to be a difficult scenario, which is why I didn't throw my hat in the ring. But nonetheless, good luck with that. And we'll get into that draft probably in the next hour to get into it. But I'd say the number one story that came out of yesterday, despite the fact that there were three games last night, is that Josh Gordon was officially reinstated by the NFL. I'll say personally, I didn't expect that he would be able to play a full season. I thought there was another suspension coming. So there's a conditional reinstatement now, Joe, and I think it changes the component of what we're looking at regarding the Patriots. I would say in general, there are many different topics to discuss here, but we'll take it right down the middle with fantasy to start. Josh Gordon was, prior to yesterday, in recent weeks, he was about the 166th player off the board, so you can do the math. He's going later in drafts, obviously, 11th round or so. People are taking a shot because they know he could conceivably be the Patriots' number one wide receiver after Julian Edelman, obviously, the top pass catcher, competing with James White to be the number two pass catcher. I say the number one because in strict football sense, he would be a number one wide receiver. Edelman's a slot guy, and White is coming out of the backfield. But do you have any shares of Josh Gordon? Was he somebody you were looking at?
I do not have any shares yet. And he was somebody that basically, if he fell to me deep enough, you know, because I saw he was going maybe 16th, 17th round in some other leagues that I was in. Some of the participants were a little bit more ambitious. But no, I don't. But I'm interested now. And you mentioned that the draft that I'm in now, I'm wondering, especially since it's a best ball situation, when I should, you know, target him. So, and like you, I was a little surprised that he was able to, that it looks like he's going to be able to come back for a full season. And from a personal perspective, I find it easier to draft him than to take a guy like a Tyreek Hill. And again, I'm not making any judgments on anyone who takes a Tyreek Hill, but Josh Gordon has had his issues, but he's hurt himself. And, you know, from what, you know, guys like Tyreek Hill have been accused of, they've hurt other people. So I feel more comfortable from a personal standpoint taking Gordon. And I hope that finally he's put his demons behind him.
Yeah. So Josh Alper from Pro Football Talk wrote this up, and he said, Gordon was suspended indefinitely last December, and the league's announcement says he'll be allowed to rejoin the Patriots for meetings and conditioning work on Sunday. So it goes on to say that he can take part in other activities, including practice, subject to appropriate progress on clinical care and other arrangements. So as is normally the case with a player coming off of a suspension like this, he has to check several boxes. There's obviously going to be additional testing. He'll probably be tested as much as anybody in the league. So he'll be allowed to attend but not play in the Patriots preseason game against the Panthers on August 22nd. This really is all pointing towards the regular season. Now, I remember talking about this with George a while back. And that was at a point where we had really no idea what was going to happen with Josh Gordon, A. And B, we thought certain that there would be some sort of suspension. Given the fact that he's had multiple suspensions, it was within in the NFL's right to sort of permanently suspend him or suspend him for a year or two based on his prior history. But what George and I actually both agreed on at the time is I thought this was a moment where the NFL could show people that they have some actual sympathy for the players that they are partnered with in this league. Because, as you stated, he didn't do anything to hurt anybody else. I totally understand if somebody takes the stance that Josh has had multiple chances. He's been in situations where he's violated NFL rules. And why are they giving him an extra chance when other players haven't been granted the same thing? But what I'll say is that Josh Gordon has been so open, Joe, about his issues. And he's been a public example of how hard some of these demons can be to overcome and how he's trying to work through them. I think relapses, as anybody could tell you that's dealt with this from friends and family members, relapses are a part of recovery. And I think he's been through that, but you can tell that he is really trying to work hard, whether it's with the Patriots, on his own, stepping away from the Browns to take care of his own health. Some people may think he's blowing these chances, but he's obviously somebody with a serious addiction issue. And I think it's a good thing that the NFL is extending this olive branch to show players that they care and they're there to help you.
Absolutely. And him sharing his situation, what he's been going through so publicly, could help other people. And, you know, that's, you know, with the reach that the NFL has, that's a big opportunity that they have, like you said, to show that they have, you know, compassion and whatnot. So, look, you know, we wish the best for Josh Gordon. Again, you know, what he's done is he's hurt himself. And like you said, I mean, he's been very open. And you know what? The American public is so forgiving. just not only in sports, but in anything. They'll give you a second, a third shot, you know, and just look at, I know it's a different situation, but look at how A-Rod all of a sudden is kind of loved by the general public because he's dating Jennifer Lopez and whatnot. The American public likes to give, roots for the underdog and likes to give people a second shot.
People were happy when Josh Hamilton came back in baseball.
Yeah.
I think people are similarly happy when Gordon is on the field here, not just for fantasy purposes, but I think people are happy to see somebody be able to overcome their problems. Now, if you're somebody out there and you want to take the stance, like, look, he's had second and third and fourth chances, I wouldn't get that at my job. You're right. I don't think you would get at that at your job. But you get another chance at society, and I think Josh is getting those. I'm happy for him that he's back on, you know, back on the right path to joining the Patriots. And, you know, fantasy is takes a back seat to the bigger story here. But for an organization that gets bashed a lot and a commissioner that gets bashed a lot, for him to say we're all rooting for Josh to succeed, both personally and professionally, and everyone shares in the hope and will continue to support him to every extent possible. But as Josh acknowledged, ultimately his success is up to him. I think sometimes with conspiracy theorists and people just hating on the league and everything else, you have to take things at face value. And they're giving him another chance, and now he's got an opportunity to take advantage of it.
Yeah, and just going back to what you said a second ago, you know, some people might say, hey, you know, if this happened to me in my line of work, I wouldn't get a second or third shot. Well, maybe you wouldn't get a second or third shot now, but if, you know, corporate America kind of sees how the NFL is handling this situation, maybe it might trickle down to the public sector where maybe in a few years, maybe you would get a shot, a second and a third shot at your job. So,
yeah,
you know,
look, there are employee assistance programs that are parts of many corporations. Mm-hmm. And if you're somebody that works a corporate job and they have an EAP in place, you can, if you're in that scenario, go to rehab and come back and your job is maintained for you. Obviously, it could impact your path at that organization because people may lose faith in you or anything else that goes along with having the sting or the stigma of addiction associated with you. But there are organizations that do assist people through these times. And I think the NFL is doing that for Josh Gordon.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I'm for it. Like I said, I mean, not to rehash what I said before, but I mean, I have a, it's easier for me to roster and to draft a guy like a Josh Gordon than someone who, you know, has done the things that Tyreek Hill has been accused of. So we'll just leave it there, I guess.
Yeah, I understood. So as far as the Patriots are concerned, I think they're going to be excited to have him back. We didn't see
Absolutely.
Him really explode. We didn't really see him explode last year with the Patriots. But in those games that Gronkowski was out, Gordon received just as many targets as James White, slightly below Edelman. But he was a part of the offense. I don't think we'll ever, frankly, see the Josh Gordon of 2014, Joe, where he blew the roof off the league for the Browns. I don't necessarily think that we'll see that, but I think he could be a legitimate cog in a Patriots offense that if he played 16 games, you're looking at 80 catches, and it solves all of the issues that we've been wondering about all summer. Like, who is that Patriots target going to be after Julian Edelman and James White? Who is it that we're going to be looking at for targets? There's been so many names thrown around that we just haven't been sure of. Philip Dorsett and everybody else that you could mention that have been drafted recently, Demaryius Thomas out there, Dontrell Inman, Braxton Berrios, N'Keal Harry, obviously drafted with the number one. But what better guy from a physical standpoint to learn behind for N'Keal Harry than Josh Gordon? They obviously have similar sets, skill sets, in that they're larger receivers with great physical ability. So I think that could be a really nice complement for Harry in a learning situation going into this season. Harry's been nicked up. It's hard for rookies that are hurt and off the field to work with Tom Brady and get accustomed to doing what they're doing in this offense. And I think Gordon obviously helps them a lot.
Absolutely. I mean, like you said, with Gronkowski retired, there are a bunch of targets to be had. And, you know, we had heard rumors of Josh Gordon working with Tom Brady in the offseason. So obviously they had an inkling that this, the Patriots had an inkling that this was going to happen. Obviously Brady feels comfortable working with Josh Gordon, so that also helps. And, yeah, it does hurt N'Keal Harry for the short term, but like you said, you know, learning behind a guy with the talent, the skills of Josh Gordon can only help Harry in the long term. And when you look at New England, they have become a little bit less of a passing team. I saw almost 60% passing plays 2017. It went down to a little under 55%. So they're moving a little bit towards a run. Look, Brady's getting a little older, but look, it's got to love that he's got George Gordon back in the fold.
Yeah. And Josh Gordon's going 166th pick overall. How far up do you think he moves? How many rounds?
So I think he was going 15th, 16th round. I could see him going down to like maybe 8th round. What do you think? Within a week or so? Within the next several days?
It's aggressive. It's aggressive, but I don't think you're far off. He could be the number two pass catcher in New England. Good place to be. We'll come back. We'll talk about last night's games. It's Mike Blewett and Joe Gallina on FNTSY. Join us right after this.
From the NFL to the NBA, DailyRoto.com is the place to win millions in daily fantasy. You can get the best DFS NFL coverage all season long for a price of $129.99 or dominate the entire daily fantasy sports realm with the Elite Package at $59.99 per month. If you use the promo code FNTSY, you get 10% off your DailyRoto package. Go to DailyRoto.com, pick your NFL or Elite Package, enter promo code FNTSY, and you'll be on your way to becoming the next Daily Roto millionaire.
Welcome back, and the NFL season is new upon us, is now upon us, and you can become the 8th person to win $1 million in a FanDuel or DraftKings tournament, setting their lineups using the DailyRoto.com DFS lineup optimizer, or become one of the countless number of people who have won thousands of dollars playing DFS using DailyRoto.com. So if you're playing DFS and not using DailyRoto.com, you're doing it wrong. Head on over and check out their tools for NFL, MLB, PGA, NBA, NHL, and sports wagering, or get access to all of them with the Daily Roto Elite Package. Enter promo code ACTION, A-C-T-I-O-N, for a 10% discount, and you'll get lineup alerts, projected ownership percentages, weather updates, fantasy projections, and use of the same Daily Roto lineup optimizers that produce millions in DFS winnings. That's DailyRoto.com, promo code ACTION, DailyRoto.com, where millionaires are made. So, Joe Gallina, we had some action last night in the NFL, and I don't know how much you caught of it, but I'll say this. Bills were high-flying last night. All of their stats look good because I don't think the Panthers were showing you much at all defensively. The biggest thing that came out of me to the games last night was how few starters were out there for a few of the teams. The Bears played virtually nobody. So I know Giants fans are excited, but they played almost nobody. Chase Daniel was in at QB. Multiple defenders were out. Ryan Nall was the lead running back for the Bears. I think you saw some similar things with the Panthers. Obviously, Cam Newton didn't play. Chris McCaffrey wasn't out there. I don't believe Luke Kuechly got many snaps, although I could be wrong about that. I was flipping back and forth between the games. So when you see Josh Allen is 9 of 11 for 102 and Matt Barkley is 8 of 10 for 110 and a touchdown, you're like, all right, we got our offense here. Right out of the gate, Cole Beasley had 5 catches in those first 2 drives. So our friend who's been on the program, Ryan Talbot, I was following his tweets during the game last night, and he was suggesting that Cole Beasley could have a huge year. He could be the check down that they've been looking for. Now, you can only take so much out of last night's game, and we have been critical of their receiving core in general, but this is the first question I'll ask about them, is Do you think Beasley can be a legitimate Julian Edelman light, or do you think that there's just not enough targets overall in this offense for him to be truly valuable?
I think there's going to be plenty of opportunity for him to have some targets. And look, I could see him getting between what? I know it's a wide range, but 60 to 75, you know, catches this season. I mean, you know, would I take a shot on him? Very late, yeah. The guy I was looking at based on the way he finished off the season here for the Bills was Zay Jones. Zay Jones seemed to have a little bit of a connection with, you know, Josh Allen late last season. He had some a few touchdowns late in the year. But in terms of Beasley, I think he's going to get a lot of targets. Like I said, you know, 70 catches, not out of the question.
Yeah. I'm just looking at all the rankings for the Bills players right now. LeSean McCoy, Devin Singletary are basically going back to back in high stakes leagues right now. They're ranked 128 and 129. Then you have John Brown at 142. And then the next one is Josh Allen. He's at 155. This is overall. And then Zay Jones at 164. So Zay Jones basically coming in your 12-team league. You can do the math. 14th round there, 14th, 15th round. So that's basically all of the Bills players are going double-digit rounds. You might see a running back sneak in there if people are feeling desperate about a running back piece. But I just wonder if people start to get influenced by Beasley. The problem with Allen is that he was inaccurate in the short to intermediate passing game. Now he has a weapon, in quotes, to be able to try to refine that part of his game. My questions regarding Josh Allen are obviously not his athleticism. It's just the fact that in what was considered to be a group of five league, with him playing at Wyoming, he was completing 54% of his passes, and I just don't know that he can fix that at this level. But they've obviously put some pieces around him to try to fix it. I don't think the receiving core is very good. Ryan Talbot, when we had him on a month ago, thought that Robert Foster would be the real value in fantasy drafts. You could basically get him for free. You don't even have to draft him or just take him in the last round. In a deeper league or best ball, he's somebody to look at because he can fly, and Josh Allen obviously throws the ball a long way. But the Beasley thing, I'm just not buying in that there'll be enough targets. Like, could he catch 65, 70 balls? Yeah. But for how much yardage? 650 yards? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's not a big season for fantasy.
Is your concern that you think that they're going to be running the ball a lot? Too many, not passing the ball enough? Or just the inconsistency of Allen's arm?
It's more Allen's arm, but yes, mm-hmm. I think they'll be still somewhat run heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Run heavy is a funny term to use now because even the run heaviest teams are still throwing the ball as much as they run it. You know,
yeah.
There's only last year, I think Baltimore and maybe Seattle were the only teams that ran it more than they passed it. So, you know, virtually every team is passing more than they run. So when I say run heavy, it obviously means just a higher percentage than league average.
Right.
So I think they'll be run heavy. And I just don't know that the offense is going to be efficient enough to run that many plays. I think the defense is going to be really good.
I agree. Yeah.
And I think the offense could be – I think the offense could actually be put in good positions by the defense. I just don't know that the offense is going to be efficient enough to force that many plays. So – you just start doing the math with Beasley. Let's say he exceeds expectations. Let's say he goes 75 catches for 750 yards. You know, 75 plus 75, we're at 150, 150 fantasy points. So, I mean, that's pretty good.
He's a flex at best. Yeah.
Yeah, he's pretty good as your flex. You throw in a couple of touchdowns. He's not going to be a big touchdown. Yeah, he's not going to be a big touchdown scorer. I mean, if he catches 75 passes for 750 yards, I think people will be like, wow, it's a pretty good season out of him. But at the same time, really, where does that put you in terms of everybody else? I don't think it, you know, I think, like you said, that's a flex guy. His career high was 75 catches for Dallas in 3 years ago. So that was for 833 yards and five touchdowns. That, I mean, that was on 98 targets. Do I think he can match that? I think that's your best case scenario. But, yeah, you'll spend a draft pick on a guy that's that can do that. But I think that's his ceiling, not, you know, I don't think he's going to be living in the 85 catch range. I just don't see it.
Right, right. Hey, back to the Zay Jones is even cheaper. You look at what he did, you know, in college, 98 catches, 158 catches his last couple of years at East Carolina, six touchdowns in his last seven games. I know he's had his issues, like prior to last season, I think they found him in a hotel lobby. Yeah. Not lobby.
Yeah, naked.
He had his issues. Let's face it. Yeah, let's face it. He had his issues. Yeah. But, you know, I know touchdowns are tough to predict. I think that maybe Zay Jones might just have a little bit more upside, and based on the way that he finished his season with Allen, I think that maybe they developed a little bit of a connection there. So, but you know, I guess
I think part of what's not that attractive to the Bills' offense, too, for, certainly from a fantasy standpoint, is we really don't know. Like, does Zay Jones take a leap this next season? The catch rate is terrible at 55% last year, 56 catches on 105 targets, but that speaks to his quarterback. And is the offensive line any good? I've said this many times about the Bills. They signed nine guys during the free agency period, and I felt like after it was all done, I was like, the best thing they did was sign Mitch Morse at center. I thought by far that was their best move that they made. So
improving that line,
which they need to do. They need to improve the offensive line. That was a huge weakness for them and impacted Allen and everything else. But and then their biggest and they drafted Cody Ford in the second round. So they are going in the right direction. They also signed Quentin Spain from Tennessee. I think he's on the downside of his career, but it's an upgrade from what they had. So they have a second-round pick from last year, a second-round pick from this year, bookending. They have Mitch Morse, which is their best signing the whole offseason, and they got a couple of other guys. So it's a remade offensive line. I think you'll need to see time to get it together. I think this offense could surprise, but I'm not betting on it. I just need to see more out of Allen. Is he a pretty good fantasy QB as a QB too? Sure, because he's going to be able to run. For all the reasons that people like Lamar Jackson, you could like Josh Allen for the same reasons. I just think the Baltimore offense will be better. Clearly, they ran the ball better last year. So, all right, so we'll stop with the Bills there for a second. On the Panthers side of things, look, I don't know what you can take out of it. No Cam, no Chris McCaffrey. Those are the top two guys in the offense. I think what's been interesting in recent weeks is that we've seen, from everything I've read recently, is that Curtis Samuel has been by far the MVP of the Panthers training camp. He caught one pass for 13 yards last night on three targets. DJ Moore, the presumptive number one wide receiver, caught one pass for 8 yards on three targets as well. But Curtis Samuel, I think you're in this best ball league. I think Curtis Samuel is going to go earlier than he would have a couple of weeks ago based on this recent news. And I'm curious how you expect the passes to be divvied out, because Chris McCaffrey is obviously the number one target in the entire offense. Greg Olsen is back for another year. We saw DJ Moore start to break out, and Curtis Samuel is somebody we've been waiting on. He was a very young player when he came into the league with a nebulous position. They didn't know where they were going to put him, and now it seems like he's going to be slotted in as the number two wide receiver, and let's see what he can do. So how are you expecting the Panthers' offense to be, and how do you expect these targets to break out?
I'll tell you, I was into Curtis Samuel basically 1 year too early, it seems. You know, and that's funny. You know, just in general, this whole preseason, and it happens every year. You ever see Pirates of the Caribbean when there's that scene where they need to get the ship to overturn, and they run to one side of the ship, then they run to the other, they run to... That's the way that this whole preseason is turning out, and that's the way it always is. But that being said, a little bit of what's being said about Curtis Samuel, I think, is a little bit, you know, coach speak and also driven by the media. But look, I could see the targets after CMC, Christian McCaffrey, pretty much being equal between DJ Moore and Curtis Samuel. And it's a great problem for the Panthers to have. A big thing that, and I don't know how true it is, supposedly, Cam Newton's got his long ball back, they said, in practice, which is a big thing because a week or two ago we were hearing that he had to relearn how to throw the ball. So that's
biggest coach speaks thing that I'm worried about. I don't know. I don't know if I can believe that.
Right.
I've heard
players
say it's night and day. Cam's arm compared to last year. He obviously was same thing that happened to Andrew Luck, right? Their shoulder gets hurt. They start adjusting so that their shoulder doesn't hurt as much, and they make it worse, and they're less accurate and everything else. So, the way the targets broke down last year in the passing game, McCaffrey had 124 targets. DJ Moore had 82. Funch is 79. Curtis Samuel, 65. So that's Curtis Samuel in a really tertiary role in that offense at 65 targets, and Funch isn't there anymore. I get that Olsen is back, but you have to, and Ian Thomas can be Ian Thomas is somebody that's interesting long-term, dynasty league type of stash. Or if you're in a really deep league and you think that Greg Olsen's going to get hurt again, then you could draft Ian Thomas late. But
which wouldn't shock
I think,
you.
I think the Samuel thing is really interesting. He and DJ Moore, 82 targets to 65 last year. That's not a massive delta, considering that Samuel missed three games due to injury. He started eight, and DJ Moore started 10. If Samuel starts those three games, their targets are even closer together, maybe 79 to 71 or something like that. So in that regard, I think Samuel is interesting, but you have to consider where they're going. Right now, DJ Moore, obviously McCaffrey is going number two overall. DJ Moore is going 46 overall. So that tells you that he is end of the third, beginning of the fourth in your 12-team leagues. And then Curtis Samuel is 86. So that's beginning of the eighth round. The reality is for me, Samuel is a better value, but are we too influenced by all of this stuff? DJ Moore was the number one wide receiver at the end of the year last year. That means he would have had to have lost that job between New Year's and now.
Right. And, just at the start of camp, so many people were excited about Moore, DJ Moore. Now, all of a sudden, you get the coach speak, the media, and Curtis Samuel is the guy. And believe me, I like both of them. I mean, both of them are dynamic guys. I mean, they even, not only wide receivers, you can use them in the run game here and there. So
that's why I like Curtis Samuel so much
too,
coming out of Ohio State, because he's a Swiss Army knife. It turns out, though, that the running back they drafted is the biggest Swiss Army knife in the whole league. He catch passes at an unbelievable rate. He's a dynamic runner. I thought McCaffrey was underrated coming out of college. The people that watched him a lot in college knew he was great. People that are NFL people, this is my sort of, it's not a hot take, but I noticed that people were doubting that he could carry the workload. I thought it was silly because he was incredible at Stanford, and he wasn't Toby Gerhart 2.0. That was a different scenario. Given the way the league is now, McCaffrey has a perfect skill set for it. So, in any event, I think why Samuel probably struggled to find a role. I think he knows that, yes, he can be a Swiss Army knife, but his number one goal for him, he has to be a polished NFL wide receiver. He can't be a jack-of-all-trades type of guy like a Percy Harvin, because their running back does that.
Great point, yes.
Okay, so we're going to come back. If there's anything else we need to clean up on Bills Panthers, we will. But I think we covered really the two major topics there. So we'll jump over to the next game, which is Giants-Bears. Daniel Jones for MVP. We'll talk about it after the break. It's Mike and Joe on Weekend Fantasy Update. We'll be right back.
From the NFL to the NBA, DailyRoto.com is the place to win millions in daily fantasy. You can get the best DFS NFL coverage all season long for a price of $129.99 or dominate the entire daily fantasy sports realm with the Elite Package at $59.99 per month. If you use the promo code FNTSY, you get 10% off your DailyRoto package. Go to DailyRoto.com, pick your NFL or Elite Package, enter promo code FNTSY, and you'll be on your way to becoming the next Daily Roto millionaire.
I don't know what Sean Engel's going with, but he's in a mood today. He's really mixing it up on music.
I like this. This is the Gap Band, Mike. You don't know the band?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
You don't know the Gap Band? Yeah. They're awesome.
I do know the Gap Band. I do know the Gap Band. But he went from Dave Matthews to the Gap Band. You can. It's interesting choices this morning on Saturday morning. So thanks, everybody, again, for joining us. But anyway, the G-Men played last night, Joe. It's your team, right? Giants fan, yes?
I'm a Giants fan, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So you obviously
Obi-Who? What?
That's right.
We're 2-0.
You're excited about 32. That's right. You're excited about 32-13 victory, 2-0, win over the Jets, win over the Bears. Daniel Jones last night, 11 of 14, 161 yards and a touchdown. I don't know that any starters played at all for the Bears on either side of the ball because Mitch Trubisky was in a jersey without pads. Leonard Floyd was in a jersey without pads. Ryan Nall was running the ball. You saw it was Chase Daniel and Tyler Bray went the whole way last night. Ryan Nall had 7 carries. The receivers, no Allen Robinson, no you had Calvin Ridley out there. You had Marvin Hall out there, Javon Wims. So none of the starting receivers, obviously. Anthony
Cut it out, blew it. We didn't have Saquon Barkley either. Come on. Give my team a break.
No Eli, though. Well, a little Eli,
I we did.
Say.
Yeah.
4 of 4 for 42
couple
yards
of a series.
Mm-hmm. Alex Tanney goes 4 of 9. Kyle LaLetta went 2 of 3. What's going to happen there, right? Alex Tanney is he just going to be gone by the next game?
They're very possible. Very possible. Yeah, I doubt it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't even know why they have 4 right now. The other 3 are playing during these games. But John Hillman was the leading rusher for the Giants last night, 16 of 56 with a touchdown. Now, Hillman played his final season at Rutgers, but his previous 3 years of eligibility, he played at Boston College, so I actually know him really well. When he was at BC, I thought he was definitely going to be a pro. I'll say that. Things didn't really go his way. Other running backs stepped up into his role. A.J. Dillon is the running back at BC now, and I think Hillman just saw the way things were going to go for him at BC, and that's why he transferred back to Rutgers. I think he's from New Jersey originally, but I think he's an opportunity to make the team. Obviously, I think ultimately Hillman would be a backup in the NFL regardless of which team he's on, but on this team in particular, he ain't going to be. He's going to be starting anytime soon. So,
no.
Daniel Jones, the negative is that he lost 2 fumbles last night. But any thoughts on the play of the Giants overall, whether it be it defensively or offensively, anything that you take out of this game with the Bears, really just not putting anybody out there on the field?
In general, with the Giants, look, it's hard to break apart the preseason, but look, in that series where Eli was in, he offensive line was playing pretty well. He had time to set himself, throw the ball. When it comes to Daniel Jones, he throws a really nice ball, tight spiral, very accurate. Yeah, he made a couple of mistakes, but he he didn't get flustered, came back after making those mistakes. You know, he fumbled the handoff, and then he got the ball stripped away. You know, I had said this when they drafted him. It's a shame that he was introduced to the Giants in this manner where there was so much controversy whether or not he should have been taken with the sixth overall pick or if they would have waited, you know. And I think he's going to be a very good quarterback in the NFL. Look, there is hope. Eli looked pretty good, looked good, but very small parts of play. And look, you know, I get it that the Bears didn't use their first teamers and whatnot, but you know what? When you play a game like this and you win two straight, I know it's preseason, but it gives you a little bit of confidence, you know? It makes you feel a little bit better rather than going 0-2 and getting the doors knocked off. So,
you know, but being that we're both here in New York and people around the country are listening, I think there's very little indication that Eli won't be in there in week one to start it, right? There's virtually no indication that Daniel Jones is going to get this job until they have to put him in there. George and I have talked about it a lot. The beginning of the Giants' schedule is not favorable. They're at Dallas. They host Buffalo at Tampa, which could be tougher than it seems. Then they host Washington, host Minnesota. Then they're at New England. That's their first six games. Now,
they also play the Cowboys without Zeke, you know?
But as of this moment, that's true. What I would say that even though I don't expect the Giants to have a good season at all, and I do expect Jones to be in there at some point, that six games isn't easy, but it is possible for them to go 2-4 or 3-3. And if they're 2-4, do they pull Eli to start Daniel Jones against Arizona in week 7? If they're 2-4, would they do that?
No. Well, look, you saw what the Giants majority owner, John Mara, said this week. He said he hopes that Jones doesn't get a single snap this season. Now, just taking that in this small little context, just that one part of what he said, you're like, what the heck is this guy talking about? But it makes sense, because if Jones doesn't get to play a single down in the NFL this year, that means that the Giants are competing for the playoffs and Eli is having a very good season. So that's what he's trying to say. So it's funny, I was watching the NFL Network the other night, and Sean O'Hara, former Giant, is one of the analysts. He had the Giants going 10-6 this season. I don't see that happening.
That's crazy.
That's crazy. I agree. Another person on Twitter said that they'd be 8-6 after 14 games. I don't agree with that either. But look, you know, if the Giants are 2-4, they're not out of the playoffs, you know, after six games at 2-4. So I think in order for Jones to get his shot, the Giants would have to be out of the playoff hunt. That's my opinion. And I think that if Jones does get a shot, and I think he will, it's going to be very late in the season. That's my opinion. And so, I always said perfect timing would be for me, and I know a lot of people don't agree with this because it's too late, but I think it's their game 14 against the Dolphins, I think they play. To me, that's an easy transition for him.
If they're out of it, he'll be in there then, because he'll play Miami at Washington and then host Philly. And who knows if Philly will have to play everybody there. They could be locked into a playoff spot, although I suspect Philly will still probably have to play that to potentially try to win the division or potentially try to get a better seeding or whatever it might be. But you know how that goes. They might play starters for a half and bench them. So,
sure.
As a Giants fan and somebody that analyzes regularly, what is your biggest concern about this team?
Right, I want to see the defense play. I want to see the defense play a lot better than it has in the past.
I agree.
I want to see the offensive line continue to gel. It got better as the season wore on last year, and I mean we've seen that how important among so many different organizations, how a strong offensive line just helps the overall play of the team. So I think if the offensive line continues to improve, builds upon what it did late last season, then I think that Eli could have a shot to have a decent start to the season.
Yeah. They added Kevin Zeitler. I think that's a little underrated in terms of the Olivier Vernon trade. Is Zeitler as good as he once was as a guard? Probably not, but I think it helps for an offensive line that 2 years ago was just Swiss cheese. Nate Solder, Will Hernandez, Kevin Zeitler are additions. Obviously, they got Mike Remmers here now as well. I think it has an opportunity to come together to be an average offensive line. That's what I think. I thought last year there were major problems with it. Mm-hmm. And even the guys that they signed in Solder and drafting Hernandez and Saquon Barkley as a rookie, they were missing a lot of assignments, and it was putting Eli in a bad position.
Right.
I do think that Eli is towards the end of it. I also think that the Eli criticism was heavy-handed by some. I think behind a capable offensive line, he would be fine. I don't think he's a Pro Bowler anymore, but I think he'd be fine.
Correct.
He's better than Flacco in that regard. But you have the concern about the defense. They're going to be starting two rookies, a rookie corner in DeAndre Baker and Dexter Lawrence. My problem with the Dexter Lawrence pick isn't his ability. I think he's a tremendously valuable player. But in today's NFL, he's not as valuable as he once was because he's effectively a two-down nose tackle type of player. And the manner in which people pass now, Lawrence will probably be in there in a lot of passing downs. I think he's a little bit more of a run supporter. But I do like the value. I do like the potential for Dexter Lawrence to be a really good player for the Giants. So they obviously have to play better on defense. They got Antoine Bethea in there, Janoris Jenkins, Jabril Peppers. So you got a couple of new guys in there along with DeAndre Baker. But
yeah, Baker's hurt, thankfully it's not as bad as it looked.
That's right. That's right. And we'll get, by the way, we got injury updates to do, if not later this hour, then the next hour, because Avery Williamson and a couple other guys got banged up, which can impact teams even certainly from an IDP standpoint. Avery Williamson for the Jets was going to be somebody that was going to be draftable because he's going to pick up a lot of tackles as their middle linebacker. Him getting lost for the season and a situation where he shouldn't have been in the game is something I want to discuss at length a little bit later. But my concern right now for the Giants is, what is this receiving corps going to be? Anybody can sit there and draft Saquon Barkley number one. That's fine. Honestly, if I had the number one pick today, I would pick McCaffrey. But I'm not going to criticize anybody that's going to pick Barkley. I just wouldn't. I just think the Carolina offense will be a little bit better. And that's that. I think I'm not going to get into massive arguments over it. I think it's going to be a little bit more of an efficient offense because of the reason I'm bringing up. What is up with this receiving core? You're losing Golden Tate for four games. Sterling Shepard is hurt right now. I haven't heard as much about Evan Engram this summer, but what do you think this is going to look like? Benny Fowler and Cody Latimer are the guys catching passes right now. So what do you expect from this receiving core, given the problems it's having in this summer?
Well, I mean, Sterling Shepard, a little banged up, but should be ready for week one from what I'm understanding. I think he takes a step forward, obviously, without OBJ there. I think Evan Engram, more wide receiver than really a tight end. Like you, I haven't heard, you know, either good or bad from him. Just the expectations are high. And, you know, I'm thinking, you know, he could catch about 70-plus passes. Like I said, more of a wide receiver than a tight end. You know, Latimer and Fowler, decent options. But after week five, you got Golden Tate, who, you know, has shown that he's pretty good relationship with Eli so far this year, and in camp, from what I'm understanding, it's looked good. So, look, you got to get past that week, that week four, and look, I mean, Eli has been most effective when he's had the strong defense, and so that's going to be big. And I mean, I think that their wide receiver crew, obviously not great with the loss of OBJ, but I think decent enough. And then you're going to have Barkley, too, that's going to serve as a tremendous safety valve for whoever's behind center.
Yeah. Yeah, look, Barkley's going to lead the team in targets, most likely. I do like the Sterling Shepard value. I'm trying to see where he's going. Mm-hmm. It's a little difficult to judge him right now because he's obviously got a broken thumb. But even still, he's going 85th overall in your higher stakes drafts. So 85th, you know, right on the turn of the 7th, 8th round. He's right around players like Darius Geis and Matt Ryan and the guy we just talked about, Curtis Samuel. So, you know, the Sterling
Shepard, Curtis Samuel, 107 targets last season.
D.D. Westbrook, Cortland Sutton are all together in a group. That's a really interesting group, right, because there are guys that have massive potential. Sutton, we're worried about his quarterback. D.D. Westbrook, we're worried about the offense in general. Curtis Samuel, not sure exactly what the role is. And Sterling Shepard, he was going to be the best value in the whole draft, and then he broke his thumb.
Gun to your head, who would you take of those guys you just mentioned? You're in a draft. You're on
Good
the
question.
Clock.
It would be Shepard easy if his thumb wasn't broken.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it'd probably still be him. I think it would still be him, but Samuel has me interested.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm a little won over by all the reports from the Panthers camp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. It's fair.
I'm getting influenced. Look, I get influenced just like anybody else. And I think reading all the stories about Curtis Samuel leads you to believe that there could be something there. I don't know that he takes over DJ Moore's job, but there could be something there, and it could be a better offense than anticipated.
I don't know if it's going to be taken over, but like I said, I think they could get equal, very similar type of target shares in that offense. But when it comes to Giants, like you said, Barkley number one in targets, Shepard, you know, number two, and the Ingram number three. And then it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Tate, because when Tate got traded to the Eagles, they didn't know what the heck to do with him. I don't think that's going to be the issue here. I think Shepard's going to play the outside, and Tate will probably, you know, obviously do what he does.
What if the G-men are 1-5 after those first six games, Joe?
What if they're 1-5 after the first six games?
After those first six.
Who are they playing after that? Because then I think we might see Mr. Jones. Well, yeah,
Arizona.
Then 1-5, maybe Mr. Jones.
Daniel Jones versus Kyler Murray, week 7. That's what George Kurtz thinks is going to happen.
Yeah.
As far as the Bears are concerned, I can take absolutely nothing out of last night.
Right.
I would say in general, I think there's a growing sentiment from analysts that the Bears are going to take a big step back this year. And I think I'm on board with that. A lot of sharp bettors are fading the Bears and betting the under, which is 9.5.
Was the Fangio going? What's the?
That's part of it. Why don't I'll do my analysis after the break, and then we'll talk about some other topics. But it's Mike and Joe, hour number 2. We're talking Bears when we come back.